Broadcasting from the Mono Wind Casino Studios. This is Multicultural AM 1600 KGST Fresno.
This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of the Portuguese American Hour here on Multicultural 1600 AM, here for your daily dose, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5. I am Justice Neves. With me, as always, Denise Borges. Denise, how you doing?
I am doing fantastically well, and you are well as well, I hope.
Yeah.
Well as well. That was choice of words.
We are here and ready to go.
We are, and hopefully all of our listeners are also with us, and they're healthy and safe. During this pandemic crisis that is affecting the United States and us all here locally as well, and of course people throughout the world. We'll be talking a little bit about that today on this edition of the Portuguese American Hour. We will also have two guests on this edition of the Portuguese American Hour, and we will have our musical invitees, which they'll be with us shortly. Just a quick, briefly update about the pandemic crisis, the coronavirus in Portugal. As of now, over 7,500 cases, 160 deaths, 43 people have recovered, which that's good. And the authorities in Portugal believe that the next 2 weeks we will see an increase as well, continue and hopefully peak in about 7 to 10 days in Portugal, because Portugal did start a little bit earlier than, for example, here in California. They are hoping that the peak will be in 7 to 10 days, and hopefully by mid to third week of April, we will see kind of a drop in some of the diagnosis and some of the cases. Portugal was under a 15-day lockout. That is going to change. It is a bit lockdown, I should say. That is going to change, and it will be another 15 days. And more than likely, it'll be announced in the next 48 hours, but more than likely, it will continue until either the mid or the end of April, much like it is here. But in Portugal, there is actually lots of things going on, including 80 people that have gone to jail for not following the lockdown orders.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're taking it very, very serious. And so, as we all should. It is amazing to see some of the pictures of some of these streets that's especially in Lisbon, which is a booming city with lots of tourism, but of course now no tourism. It was very little for a while there, and basically in the last week no tourism at all. And so it is a quite different city, but the Portuguese people are really feeling some of the economic pain, but they're willing to suffer it because they feel that the social distancing has to be done, and hopefully it will change in the next month or so.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And if they're expecting their spike to eventually peak out, hopefully we'll follow suit relatively soon.
I hope we do as well. So that is the case as far as Portugal is concerned. We'll talk a little bit more about the coronavirus and some of the effects in the Portuguese American community as well throughout this hour. We have our musical invitees ready to go. They are a group called Bel Cantos. These are some very special, talented musicians. There are seven of them, and very dear to my heart. They were here in Tulare about 2.5 years ago. In the Central Valley. They played in Tulare. They played at Fresno State. They are a bunch of talented young people in their 20s, early and late 20s, early 30s, and they have put together this musical group. They're going to present their first song here. This is a brand new CD, first time ever played in a radio station here in the United States of America, here on the Portuguese American Hour, and the music is called Encontro. Let's see what you think of it.
Visto um novo olhar nas incertezas. coisas que nascem em mim. Há uma viagem sem fim. Finto o horizonte para poder voar. Devo a saudade para continuar. E o que era pouco cresceu logo assim, livre para fora de mim.
That was Bel Cantos, a musical group from the islands of the Azores, from the island of Terceira. They were here in California. They're a bunch of young people in their late 20s, early 30s. They were here in California. Actually, two of them are in their early 20s. They were here in California just as about 2.5 years ago as part of the Tulare Angra Sister City Foundation 50th anniversary. And they also did a little presentation of Fresno State as well. Actually, they performed for a luncheon that we had at one of the orchards. So that was kind of nice.
Very cool.
Very, very cool. It was in the month of April. And so we are actually going to be 3 years in a couple of weeks. And they went back to the Azores. They've been working on this CD, this musical presentation, 10 different songs, all originals, for the last 2 years. And they just released it, and they sent it to me. And we are the first to play it in the United States of America, and actually one of the first radio stations in the world, because they're going to have their presentation in the Azores next week.
So honored.
Here we are. We are honored to do this. They're a bunch of great young folks, very, very talented. We'd hope to have them back. We hope to get them here at least within the next year or so. And we have our first guest on the line, and from the city of Visalia, young lady, Margarita Melo. Margarita, or Maggie, or Margarida in Portuguese, is an attorney who we'll be chatting with for the next few minutes, who I met through a course at the College of the Sequoias, who attended lots of our different events that we've had at the California State University of Fresno through the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute. And we are happy to have her on the line. Margarita, welcome. Good afternoon to you. Thank you for taking time to chat with us for a little bit.
Well, thank you so much. I love being on the show and being able to talk to you. So
yeah, well, we definitely miss you and John. I miss the classes, and we miss having you this semester in class. Let's talk a little bit about your course. You are an attorney, of course. You have a you come from an island where there's or your ancestors, I should say, come from an island, and that is the largest in the archipelago of the Azores, but not a lot of folks in this area. Many people are from the central part, Terceira, São Jorge, Pico, Faial. Tell us a little bit about your Portuguese connection and a little bit about your family history, if you don't mind.
Sure, absolutely. So I was born to two folks who came from the Azores, both from the San Miguel or St. Michael Islands. My mom and dad got married in the 60s. They traveled to Montreal because they couldn't get passage to the United States. So they went to the probably coldest place on the planet, apart from Alaska, that you could go. So they went from beautiful tropical island weather with wonderful foods and everything to Montreal, which is a wonderful city, but very, very cold in the wintertime. My father was originally one of 13 children.
Wow.
So my grandmother was busy. My mom is has a large family as well, one of seven. And so I have family everywhere. I still have family in the Azores. I have cousins and aunts and uncles. But most of my family, my father's and my mother's families, traveled to either Canada on the East Coast, mm-hmm. Or Massachusetts, mm-hmm. A lot of folks in Fall River and Rhode Island and New Jersey, and the majority of family ended up in the Bay Area, San Francisco, and the surrounding communities. And eventually, when I was about 10 years old, mm-hmm. My father decided he was tired of shoveling snow every winter, and it was taking a toll on his health, and so he decided to come out to warmer climates, and he came to the Bay Area to join a lot of his family here. One interesting thing that happened when when my parents went to Montreal and they entered into Canada, one of the things that happened was their name changed. Back then, when you had a name like ours was originally DeMello, the authorities decided that you no longer were DeMello, you're now Mello. And so my name is actually different from most of my family who traveled into the United States. Hmm. And so when we got to the U.S., I went to school in the Bay Area. I grew up by my grandmother was in the home with us most of the time when I came home from school, and she only spoke Portuguese. So I grew up speaking Portuguese in the home and then French in school and with my friends. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until I was a little older that I learned how to speak English. Mm-hmm. And when they plopped me down in the middle of the Bay Area speaking Portuguese and French, nobody knew how to speak those languages. And so they basically just put me in English language school and said, good luck to you. Eventually, I graduated high school from this little town called Newark Memorial High School in Newark, California.
Mm-hmm.
And I went off to college. I went to Berkeley. I was in Berkeley for 4 years, and I graduated and went straight into law school in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to law school, and I graduated in 1993, and decided I wanted to be a lawyer who practiced in court and did trials and like those, Perry Mason on television and those guys who do exciting things. And so I started my career in San Francisco in a small law firm where we handled trials dealing with misappropriation of trade secrets. Mm. So when somebody stole somebody's formula, mm-hmm. then they would get sued, and then we would put on a trial. So I did that for a little while. But I really wanted to, again, be like that lawyer who's in court and doing trials and doing murder cases. And so I decided I wanted to work for a small county where I could practice my court work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a job with Tulare County District Attorney's Office. And so I became a prosecutor. And I was a prosecutor for approximately 13 years, both in Tulare and in Kern County.
Wow.
And I was able to handle multiple murder trials and sex cases and white collar cases, just you name it. I did over 100 trials in jury trial situations, and just about everything one can do in criminal law.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, I got a little bit tired of doing that type of work because it was the same stuff over and over. So I decided I would go ahead and take a different step. And at the time, Governor Schwarzenegger was looking for some folks to oversee the prison system. And so he appointed me to a position where I was responsible for oversight of the Department of Corrections.
Hmm.
So I did that for about 7 years. One of the funny things, though, when I came to Tulare County, I came from an area in the Bay Area where there were a lot of Portuguese. Hmm. And so my parents were very involved in the community, in the Portuguese community, until the day he passed away. My father spoke primarily Portuguese with us, and my father spoke 5 languages fluently, so we did a lot of different languages in the home. And so when I came to Tulare County, I actually didn't know very much about the location, and the first time that I was introduced to anyone, I was introduced to a Portuguese judge by the name of William Silveira, or Bill Silveira,
right,
who is a wonderful, wonderful man.
Yes, he is.
And when they introduced me to him, they told him that this is a woman who speaks Portuguese. And that's how they introduced me. And so I met the judge, and I thought, wow, what a strange way to introduce me. And so I said, oh, okay. And the next person they introduced me to, they said, this is the lady who we told you about who speaks Portuguese. And every person they were introducing me to, that's how they would introduce me, Portuguese lady. And I thought, this is very odd. And so I would go, finally I said, well, why do you keep doing that? And they said, well, because you're Portuguese. And I said, well, I get that, but why do you keep introducing me that way? And I said, well, because we have so many Portuguese here. And I didn't know that. And
right.
I said, really? And they said, yeah, don't you all know each other?
Said, yeah.
No, not quite. And they kept saying, but aren't you from some small island? Yeah. And they said, well, aren't you all basically related? And I said, well, no. I said, no, there's a lot of people.
Yeah, they're not there. That small. and there's an ocean between them.
Exactly. And I said, do you know anything about the Azores? And they're like, well, we just know that everybody comes from Seda. And I said, yeah, I don't. I said, well, where do you come from? And so I'm trying to explain. It was actually very funny. And so I finally realized that they just thought, mm-hmm. and these are non-Portuguese, of course,
right.
They just simply thought that we came from this place, like basically the size of Visalia, right? And so it was really kind of funny the way that they kept reacting to me. But one of the other things that they kept asking is, in this area, we have so many dairies.
Right.
And so many Portuguese folks established their dairies here when they came out to California. And so there's this idea that if you're a dairy owner, of course you're from the islands of the Azores, right? And mostly from Terceira. And so when they would introduce me, they would say, oh, here's a Portuguese woman. And then the person on the other side would say, oh, what dairy are you from?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't come from a dairy. I come from the Bay Area and Montreal before that. And they would look at me with a quizzing look like, are you sure you're Portuguese?
And right. Then, yes, right. You're supposed to come you're supposed to come from one island to Tulare, and that's it, and not go anywhere else.
Yeah, and it was very fun. And so eventually, when I moved here to Tulare County, I met a lot of folks who were from the islands and started going to some of the events, especially anytime there's good food, right. Maggie Mello's there.
Well, Maggie, I need to take a very quick break. So if you don't mind staying on the line with us, and we'll be right back and we'll continue this fascinating conversation. Again, this is the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. We'll be right back with our second segment.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And we are back with our second segment of this edition of the Portuguese American Hour here on Multicultural 1600 AM, anywhere in the valley on the AM radio 1600, and of course on any kind of phone radio app, and also online, either in the valley or anywhere in the States or throughout the world, as some folks do listen to us from Portugal, and we always find that fascinating, especially in the Azores. And that is www.multicultural1600am.com. Again, www.multicultural1600am.com. We are continuing our conversation with Maggie Mello, Marguerite Mello, who is an attorney who lives in Tulare County, and telling a little bit about her story and, of course, her coming into the valley from a different experience than some valley folks are used to, which is you came, if you're from Portuguese background, you came from either Terceiro São Jorge and you come directly to Tulare. Maggie, again, thank you for joining us, and thank you for staying with us during the break as well.
My pleasure.
A little bit, and you reminded me. I used to go to school here when I first came. I was your age. I was actually 10, coming from the Azores directly, and of course I didn't know any English. And when I went to school, and as I learned the language, and now in my teen years, maybe 14, 15, when I was in high school or eighth grade high school, I remember people would ask me, Borges or Borges with an English accent is or an American accent is a little bit more of a common name, as Mello is in Portuguese, and yes. And so they would ask me which Borges are you from, which dairy does your dad own, and I would say I'm the poor Borges, we own no dairy. And so at least it would always get a good laugh out of everybody, because that was and that was the truth. We did not own any dairy. We were the poor people. And so you reminded me of that when you were saying which dairy folks are you from. So you stayed in this area, and let me ask you a quick question as far as the law is concerned. You know, of course, you ask any, at least of my generation and the younger generation, I don't know how it is today, but you asked any kid years ago, and what do you want to be? Do you want to be a doctor or a lawyer? When did you know that you kind of wanted to do law? Was that something?
This is kind of embarrassing, because when I went to Berkeley, I graduated with a rhetoric and legal studies degree, because it was probably one of the quickest degrees that I could get, because I didn't want to be in school all that long. And so when I got my degree, there wasn't too much I could do with it. I became a book editor, and those were sort of the paths you could take, but you couldn't make a lot of money doing that. So I decided I was going to try to figure out a way to not have to get a real job for a few more years. And so I decided law school was the way to go. And at the time, we had lots of law schools around the area in San Francisco. And so I figured I could stay around the area, and I could basically delay getting a real job and being a grown-up for 3 more years. And so that's what I did. And so I figured that once I got my law degree, I probably was going to end up becoming a non-practicing lawyer. I figured that I would go into something not really law-related. But once I got into law school, I became a teaching assistant for our litigation techniques area. And I had a wonderful professor who has since passed away, But he has been a very famous lawyer and has actually represented a man who had unfortunately killed his family. His name was Jeffrey McDonald, and he had been a Marine and had been convicted of murdering his wife and his children. But one of the things about this particular lawyer, he was so wonderful, and he was so charismatic and so great that I started working for him and really started to appreciate what it would be like to actually be a trial lawyer. And sometimes you see movies and these people are in court screaming and putting on a show, and all of that is Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And in real life, being a trial attorney has always meant to me that you have to be able to think on your feet, you have to be very smart, and you have to really know what you're doing in there. And to gain that level of ability was really important to me. And so it wasn't until about my second year of law school that I realized that I really was in the profession that I was meant to be. And so now we have a law firm.
Mm-hmm.
I actually retired from the state service, and then now we practice in the area of civil rights or civil litigation. So we handle a lot of cases that have to do with violation of your constitutional rights, equal protections. We do voting cases in which we force jurisdictions to correct the way that the voting is done so that people can get equal representation in, mm-hmm. in the government and in boards and things of that sort. And
correct.
One of the things that we do is we look to correct violations of constitutional rights, like your First Amendment right to speak and assemble and the right to practice religion of your choice, to be free from unreasonable searches, sort of things like that.
Mm-hmm. A little bit about, I know our time is limited. I could talk to you, I think, for hours. And I'm sure that our listeners are enjoying it as much as I am. A little bit about the Portuguese connection. So we talked about, of course, your family from São Miguel coming to Montreal and then, of course, transitioning to the Bay Area, to California.
Yes.
And since then, have you and your family had a visit to the Azores? Have you gone back? I mean, well, you were born here already, so... But have you visited the island of your parents and your grandparents?
I have. I've visited San Miguel, but I've also done a little island hopping.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone to Santa Maria. One of the things I really loved was the weather is just beautiful out there. I mean, people compare it to Hawaii, but I honestly think it's better than Hawaii. And the beaches are... I love Santa Maria. I just laid there for days and days just on the beach, enjoying the community and the food. The food is just unbelievable there. Everything is so fresh and so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raised in eating a lot of traditional Portuguese foods. Like one of my favorite foods is bacalhau.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just, some of the food there is just so wonderful. And so I am married to my partner, who's also an attorney. And unfortunately, we together have not yet gone back to the Azores. So we plan to do that pretty soon,
mm-hmm.
Assuming that
the virus will let us. Yeah.
Yeah, I had some, I have a lot of family members, and my family all like to travel, and they're everywhere all the time. And so my family has homes in some of the islands, and so they go back there, back and forth quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But with this issue with the virus and the scare that's going on, it's requiring people to really modify their behavior and what they normally do. And some of this is pretty scary on how it's all going to resolve itself. So.
Sure. And the Azores are taking this very, very seriously. As I mentioned earlier with Justice, my producer here, basically people The Azores is very heavy on, as you know very well, especially in the last 15 to 20 years, very heavy on tourism. I mean, it's significantly become a very important part. It wasn't like that 25 years ago, but in the last 20 years, it's been increasing. And certainly within the last 12 years, it's a very, very important part, not just the Portuguese Americans, you know, like yourself, a first or second generation who go back, sure. but also folks who aren't Portuguese, from America, from the U.S. and Canada, and also from other European countries. But they're willing to shut down everything because they really are concerned about this.
Yeah, well, it seems to be getting a little out of hand. Mm-hmm. The Azores, in one way, are nice because they're isolated. So they can protect themselves, I think, a little bit better than some of the other locations that have borders that allow people to go freely between the borders. Those are, I think, more susceptible to having the infiltration of the virus. But like you said, the problem with the Azores is that it relies so heavily on tourism. And when you get to a certain age, at least, you want to start traveling and you want to start seeing things and you want to be able to leave your house and go out and explore the world. And so the Azores, which is where I'm from, is one of those locations that, for me, I will always want to go back to and always want to visit and spend some appreciable time there. But with this particular virus that's been spreading and killing quite a few folks, I understand why you'd want to lock everything down and keep everybody out, at least until it's stabilized.
Correct, correct. And so one of the things that you mentioned about, you know, being at the beautiful beaches in Santa Maria is that a lot of folks, when they go back to the Azores, those who were born there or whose parents came from there, and even grandparents, but when they go, a lot of times, unfortunately, they stay on their own island or the island of their parents or grandparents, and a lot of times they even stay in their own village and don't branch out to see, you know, the other villages and the other beautiful places and even the other islands. And some people are probably, when you said that you could lay out on a beach in Santa Maria, I mean, there's a couple of beaches also very nice in San Miguel, and there's and there's one or two interstate as well, but that's it. Most of your islands don't have beaches, they have rocks. And so and one of the wonderful things that you know, Santa Maria has is that there's a part of the island that's very dry compared to one part that's very, when I mean dry, drier, anyway. One part is kind of, you know, yellow, brownish, and the other part is very, very green. And people are kind of unaware of this, but Santa Maria has probably some of the best beaches in the whole archipelago.
Oh, yes. I've been there, and that's where I spent a long period of my vacation, was just laying out on the beach and relaxing and sleeping and just enjoying life. At the time, they were having an August festival,
mm-hmm.
and the island had, I think, an extra something like 50,000 people there just to come to the festival. And so it was actually very nice because there was music going at all hours of the day, except for in the middle of the day where everybody slept. But, it, you know, until 4 o'clock in the morning, people were partying and dancing and having food, and it was really wonderful at the time. So I had a really good time, and I wasn't in my 20s or my 30s. I was mm-hmm. a little bit older when I went and did that. So
right.
Even for me, who was a little older than most of the folks laying out with me on the beach,
mm-hmm.
It was a really, really wonderful time. And the Azores is one of those places that the folks there are so friendly, or at least they were, when, you know, very welcoming. And one of the frustrating things was I speak Portuguese, but I need to practice it because that's not the language I speak mostly every day. And so when I went back to the Azores, it was my idea that I would get to speak a lot of Portuguese so that way I would come back being even better mm-hmm. Speaker than I left. The problem is, when you get there, everybody's trying to speak English to you.
Correct.
Because
yeah. they want to learn. They want to learn. Yes.
Right. So then I kept having to tell them, speak in Portuguese. So I, you know, it was kind of frustrating because I went, part of the reason that I wanted to go there was to get more acclimated to the way they speak there. Because one of the other things is every island has a different way of speaking. They have a different accent. And so sometimes I'll be speaking with someone and they say, "Are you from St. Michael?" And I'll say, "Well, yeah, my parents were." And they go, "Oh, we could tell." And then they'll speak in Portuguese, and I have to say, "I'm sorry, what did you say? Can you repeat that?" Because I'm having a hard time with their accent. And you know, when I talk to people, they say, "Oh, you're Portuguese. Are you from Brazil?" And I give the look like, "No, not even close." You would know if I was from Brazil. I speak with a different accent.
Yeah, and sometimes even within the Portuguese world, they don't know that there is different accents from mainland, from island to island. As you mentioned, you know, sometimes people in mainland Portugal think there's only one accent, or even in mainland Portugal, there's differences in the regions between the way people speak in Porto and people speak in Algarve. Maggie, thank you so much for being with us. I hope to have you back so we can talk about some different topics here in the Portuguese American Hour. And
my pleasure.
Thank you so much. And I'd love to speak to John if he's around.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to take a very quick musical break, and then if you'll stick around, we'll come back and we'll speak to John for a little bit, okay? Again, thank you so much, and best of luck as we continue to live these kind of different times. We're all kind of apprehensive of what's going on, of course.
Yes, it was my pleasure, and thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, Maggie. And that was Maggie Melo, and we were going to take a musical break. We're going to listen to our musical invitees, Bel Cantos, and then we're going to have our regular break, and we'll come back and speak to John Sarsfield, who is Maggie's husband, and who will be, he's not Portuguese, but we're going to be talking a little bit about how he kind of foresees the culture itself, and the culture of Maggie, and the culture that he's been kind of involved in, whether through family, of course, and through professional life, and also through some of the things that he's attended at college and university. So we'll be right back. But right now, let's take a musical break. Bel Cantos and this very special song called Tulare. It's a song dedicated to the city of Tulare and the 50th anniversary of the Tulare Angra Sister City Foundation.
Então vimos o sorriso.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And we are back with our third and final segment of the Portuguese American Hour, this edition here on Multicultural 1600 AM. We are a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University of Fresno. And we have on the line a good friend, John Sarsfield, who is also an attorney in the city of Visalia. And John, thank you so much, and thank you for sticking around for us.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to be here.
I appreciate it. So a little bit about your story. It's not a Portuguese story, but it's a story also. We all have a story. So take a few minutes and tell us how you ended up being an attorney as well.
Okay. Well, my family is of Irish descent. They all settled in Oregon, except when my mom and dad got married, they ended up going to Alaska to work for the military. And that's where I came along. And then when they were done with that, they decided to go to California. So I grew up in the Bay Area most of my life, went to Santa Clara University for college and also for law school. And then I joined the Army, and I didn't in the Army, but I went on active duty in the Army and went to Monterey at Fort Ord.
Mm-hmm.
Worked there for a couple of years, worked for the district attorney's offices after that, got elected district attorney in San Benito County in Hollister.
Wow.
And when that job was done, I got appointed by Governor Schwarzenegger to do prison oversight, same job that Maggie talked to you about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Maggie and I actually met, although we grew up just blocks away from each other in the Bay Area. Our families lived very close to each other.
Isn't that interesting?
And we had a lot of friends in common, but we never knew each other growing up.
Right.
So it took going to prison, so to speak, for us to actually meet each other. And got married a few years later, and I retired from state service and government service, and she retired, and we opened up our own small office, and we do civil rights work and represent employees who get in trouble at work and voting rights cases and things like that.
Sure. So growing up in at least going to college in Santa Clara, any contact with Portuguese Americans at all? In that area, there's a good community, but it's been a community that's stays to itself, like a lot of us throughout the California.
Well, yeah, actually, I did. I had some friends in high school and college who were Portuguese, but it was just another ethnic group.
Right.
I had lots of friends in different groups, and I didn't really experience anything of it. But I was always aware there was a Portuguese hall down the street from the university.
Mm-hmm.
I forget which one, but they always had these parades, which now I know what they are, but they were always having these parades in the fall, either end of August, early September, if I remember correctly. And I was always aware of them, but I didn't know what they were, and I knew they were a Portuguese group. That's all I knew. And then years later, once I got involved with Maggie and we had to get married, now I know this stuff cold, and I know what all these groups are and what the parades are and the festas and all that good stuff. So I'm much more aware of it now than I was.
Right. And
I enjoy it, especially as an outsider. I really enjoy it because, if nothing else, the food is wonderful and Irish food is terrible. So.
Well, not all Irish food.
pretty much.
It's a little bit blasé, I should say that. We have a few more spices, it seems like. So other than the food, and of course that we're loud, that's kind of a Portuguese or Azorean trait as well. This involvement with a different culture, how does that, I think that's one of the things that in California, we are such a multicultural state, but sometimes we don't get involved in the multicultural aspect unless we know someone quite well of that culture. How important, from your perspective, is that we kind of, learn about each other's cultures?
I think it's one of the things that makes California such a great place is that you have all these different cultures that are out there and you can kind of pick and choose. And I like, the little exposure I have, but I like Portuguese culture.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it because it comes out of the Spanish culture as well. I mean, not just Spanish, but they share a lot of common similarities. And growing up in California when I did, you couldn't help but be involved with Spanish culture.
I mean,
it's just such a huge part of the state. And
mm-hmm.
So that part was a relatively easy transition for me. But I like it. And believe it or not, actually, it's not that different from the Irish culture either.
That's right.
Because the Irish culture is heavily Catholic, predominantly, except for the North. But it's predominantly heavily Catholic. And so that I understand a lot of where the cultural references and cultural foundations are because they're the same. They just do it, if I may, they just do it better in the Portuguese cultural event because they're not having to deal with all the nonsense the Irish are going through.
Correct, yeah. And Maggie tells me that one of the plans is to go to the Azores. Looking forward to that.
Oh, very much so. And I'm doing my part to get ready for that. And that's where I met you, was in the Portuguese class. And I'm hoping to continue that so that I can get a little bit of a grasp on the language. I took Spanish for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And so I understand structurally how it works. And it comes back to me. But it's the hard part is picking up the actual language and being able to practice it, because aside from my wife, I don't have anybody to talk to.
Correct,
here,
yeah.
At least right now, because we're all locked down,
right,
in the house,
right. And so, what is of the different foods? What is one of your favorite foods? Let me not make that really hard, but just your favorite two foods.
The number one thing that I like is this is gonna sound crazy, but I like pimenta.
And okay.
Maggie's family makes their own.
Yeah.
And they have this tuna that they make, and they put it on there with the oil and the pimenta, and it's the greatest thing I've ever had.
Ooh, I gotta learn that one. That's convenient. Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's good with tuna. Yes. Yeah.
We have jars and jars and jars, and we make it in a vat. Roughly once a year or so.
Uh-huh.
And it's really, really wonderful. I love that and bacalhau.
And bacalhau.
I love bacalhau, yeah. Yeah. And that, I could eat that all day long.
Well, John, thank you so much for taking time to be with us, also to share some of the stories and to share also. I'm a very, very big fan of pimenta from the island of San Miguel. The whole Azores has it, but I think San Miguel makes the best. And Maggie, having her background from the island of San Miguel, I'm sure I gotta steal a jar from you one of these days.
Absolutely. Well, nice talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, John. Take care. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And so that was John Sarsfield. And prior to that, Maggie Mello. We spoke a little bit about the stories, about the Portuguese culture, about someone not being from Portuguese culture, but being intertwined with it. Of course, a very, very curious situation that they grew up just a few blocks away from each other, but did not know each other. That happens, of course. That happens in big cities, and that happens in small cities as well. We don't, we all have our friends and our neighbors that we kind of converse with more than others, but they're a fascinating couple. They're lovely people. I had the good fortune of meeting them, as I've met so many good people throughout my courses. John and Maggie took the course Portuguese 1, a very basic level course at the College of the Sequoias in Visalia, and where I have been teaching for 20 years. And the course actually was in the afternoon. One of the things when I was teaching high school, the course at COS was in the evening, because I taught high school until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and usually had some responsibilities and prepare classes for the next day and all that kind of stuff. And so my classes at COS for many years were either between 5 and 7 or 6 and 8. I truly enjoyed those classes because of one major thing, and that is I got a lot of students throughout the years, such as John and Maggie, who were not your traditional students. They're not at COS because they need to get the units to either graduate from a course that they have there, or from a program they have there, or to get transferred to a CSU UC or private college or anywhere else. And so they were not, the typical 19 or 20 year olds that are at COS, or 21 or in that early 20s. So throughout the years, I recall fondly, I think she probably has passed, but I recall about, I don't know exactly the year, but I would venture to say anywhere between 11 to 14 years ago. So in that time span, I know it was basically, we're in 2020, was the mid 2000s. So maybe already 14, 15 years ago. I had a young lady who was my eldest student ever. She was 79 years old. And wow. 79 years old. And I remember vividly Portuguese lady, the same story as Maggie just shared with us. She was from the Valley area. I don't recall exactly the city, but I think it was in Kings County. And she had Portuguese as her first language, although she was born in the United States, like Maggie was born in Canada. And she spoke Portuguese with her parents and with her grandparents. Her parents spoke English. So mm-hmm. When she went to school, she already knew some English, but she started Portuguese. And then, of course, in school, it was all English. And her parents always spoke to her in English, but her grandmother, just as Maggie mentioned, and the same thing with my kids as well, her grandmother was the one that was home. And so after school, mom and dad were, you know, working. And so grandma was home. And so she, every day when she came from school, she would spend 2 or 3 hours with her grandma, and so she spoke Portuguese with her of all every single day. And so she kept her Portuguese when she was, I believe, 18, right after she graduated from high school. I believe she married someone who was in the service, if I recall the story correctly. It's been a few years ago. And they moved, and they went to different parts. And then, meanwhile, a few years later, her grandmother passed. And she never spoke Portuguese again. And she was 79, and she had forgotten the language. Mm. It was interesting, though. That's not Maggie's case. Maggie speaks Portuguese very well. But in the... as we started the course, she would remember the words. She would remember the sounds. She would remember the words. When she hadn't forgotten everything. She knew basic things like greetings and farewells and, you know, obrigado, thank you, and that kind of stuff. But she had forgotten how verbs worked and how I said, you know, how you would carry a normal conversation. And basically because she had not had any contact with it from all those years, and basically in her case 60 years. So it's a very interesting situation that if you don't use the language, obviously you lose it. And but to kind of reflect on how I met Maggie and John is the community college courses. And even here at Fresno State as well, through Open University, especially if they're evening courses, you have the opportunity of meeting some people who taking the language just because they want to take it for fun. Mm-hmm. They're not taking it to get a grade. And I wish I could teach that way, by the way. I wish I could teach without no exams and no quizzes and none of that stuff. But academically, obviously, we can't function that way. Or maybe we can, but it'll take a long time before that gets changed. And so I think it was a great conversation with Maggie and John, and I thank them both for being here.
Yeah.
And we're up until the end of the Portuguese American Hour. We have less than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun, and hopefully our listeners had as much fun as we did with this edition of the Portuguese American Hour. As we go to the end of the show, I wanted to, once again, a little bit of information about the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. I know I've mentioned this many times, but just to reiterate again that we are basically physically closed as far as the events. We had 5 events planned for the months of April and May, and these events have now all been canceled. So please, if you have still an old flyer or something that you've seen online that shows a particular date, just remember and remind your friends and your family that unfortunately, due to the situation, the coronavirus, all events at the university and all events of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute are canceled, as well as all of the recordings that we were going to do this semester. We had planned with the students and with volunteers to do at least another 30 to 40 recordings of the Portuguese Oral History Project, to have them transcribed and then archived in the library. Those obviously have been put on hold as well, because we're not going into folks' homes, and we're not going to do any recordings at least through the end of May. And so the other events that are in the Portuguese American world, as far as we know, all Portuguese events of the Portuguese American community throughout the entire state of California up until the first week of May have been canceled. So festas, dinners, events like that, any medium or large scale events, the San Joaquin Portuguese Festival that was scheduled for mid-April, a big event at the fairgrounds in Turlock, at the Stanislaus Fairgrounds in Turlock, has been canceled. Last year, there were over 15,000 people present. That event has been canceled as well. And lots of the Portuguese celebrations are thinking about canceling. The San Joaninas Festas in Terceira, the last 10 days of June, have now officially been canceled by the municipality of Angra do Heroísmo. It's a big event and really important for the economy of the island, but they feel it's best to cancel. The Santo Cristo celebration, which is huge in the island of São Miguel in mid-May, was around the 15th through the 20th of May. That event has been canceled, and that is the first time that they have not had a Santo Cristo celebration in São Miguel in 320 years. So the festa has been continuously happening every single year. This is the first time in 320 years that the Santo Cristo celebration, very large celebration, lots of immigrants and lots of Azoreans of first, second, even third generation from the U.S., from Canada, from Bermuda, from different parts of mainland Portugal, from other parts of Europe, tourists also from different parts of the Azores, people who go to São Miguel to pay a promise to Santo Cristo dos Milagres. So it involves folks from different islands as well. And it has been canceled. It was scheduled for mid-May. And again, the first time in 320 years, which is amazing. The San Joaninas, the Festa de São João, which is not a festa that has 300 years. It has much less than that. It was only canceled once, and that was in 1980 when Angra do Heroísmo had an earthquake. That year, there was no festa, but already in 1981, there was one. But the Santo Cristo Festa is amazing that it has been continuously happening every single year for 320 years. So lots of different things happening in Portugal as well. We will keep you informed, and in the Portuguese American community throughout the state, we'll try to keep you informed here on the Portuguese American Hour. So do tune in every day from 4 to 5 p.m. We are a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. We thank you for listening. Take care, stay safe, stay healthy. We'll see you next time.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.